Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps to build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then this show. Hi, Lauren. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a writer based in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm the author of Lunar Love, which is my debut romantic comedy. I love books, movies, and food. And when I have time, which is rare nowadays, I run my blog, A Dash of Cinema, where I make the food that you see in movies. It's food inspired by movies. And I have a writing, culinary, and tech background.
Oh my gosh, I gotta talk about. So first of all, so I'm assuming movies were your passion, were your gateway to rom-coms and whatnot. So what has been the favorite dish that you have created? Let's go with that.
Sure. So I, for A Dash of Cinema, I loved making, it's called Cinnabuns of Steel, which is inspired by Legally Blonde. And it's inspired by Clueless. It's inspired by Clueless.
Either way, equally great movies. I'm not mad. Either way, equally great movies. So
yes, for the Legally Blonde, I did do white chocolate truffles with strawberry, so powdered strawberry. So for Clueless, I did Cinnabuns of Steel because there's a reference to that in the movie, and I made homemade sprinkles, and they're surprisingly easy to make. You just mix up a lot of sugar, and you pipe long strips and you break them apart. So it had coffee and cinnamon inside and then sprinkled with a glaze and sprinkles and edible star glitter.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so good. And then I remember that Advance of Steals, which is a very 90s reference of like yes. aerobics of the 90s. Like that was like what people were watching. That was their Peloton. Totally. Peloton was Buns of Steals in the 90s and Jane Fonda in the 80s. But Buns of Steals was the big one.
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh my gosh, I love this. And so what inspired you? Like, were you a kid growing up and like found movies to be kind of like the escape, or was it something, you know, like you were sneaking in, you were like, you're not supposed to watch these, but I'm going to make sure I watch them all.
That was me in Grease. I was like watching that way too early. Yeah. And so movies definitely were an escape. And they also for me were just a way to kind of learn about love before I could really read like romance novels and things like that. And so I loved romantic comedies, and I was actually a film major in college. And so I just really gravitated toward that. One of my thesis was on The Grand Gesture. And so I think it really formed a lot of how I viewed love. And I think it's really interesting how the genre has evolved over time in romantic comedy movies, but also in the genre of the novel, romance and romantic comedies. And so it's all very formative. I watched a lot of it during my formative years. So I'm impressioned from it.
Yeah, I am sad that the romantic comedy, although they try to do resurgence, and I'm still mad about the whole Netflix and Nancy Meyer romantic comedy debacle. But I'm sad that, you know, like I don't know about you, but I grew up in the, I was born in the '80s, but I grew up in like my formative years were the '90s and the aughts. And so there were so many, there were teenage movies, there were like the grown up ones, there was a little bit of everything. And like every month, every week, there'll be a, like a brand new one. And it was just like, it was like the golden year of romantic comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. We need another resurgence.
We do. So yeah. I don't know. Netflix needs to get it together and give her all the budget that she needs. I don't care. Like I'll do a GoFundMe. I'll donate, you know, or Kickstarter.
I think a lot of her viewers would donate.
Yeah.
We need more Nancy Meyers.
We need one of Nancy Meyers. Like, you know, we don't have Nara Ephron. We might as well get that, you know.
Sadly, it's true.
You know, so it's a kind of like an interesting, because romantic comedies are having resurgence in publishing, that's what's selling. That's what people are looking for. That's what's introducing many young readers to romance. It's romantic comedies. It's this beautiful illustrated covers with, like, yes, you know, with a touch of a little bit of, like, they're more diverse. They're more, they talk about issues, like real life issues and stuff, yep, like that that's happening. So it's a new resurgence, but you're in it, you know? So what led you to start writing fiction as opposed to maybe being a filmmaker? You
know? Yeah. So I do writing as my day job as well. And it's a little bit more technical and rooted in kind of more nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And so to find that creative outlet, I gravitated toward fiction, and I grew up writing just kind of stories in the conference rooms where my parents worked. And it was my way to escape and my way to dream and imagine. I just never really imagined that I could do it as a career. Mm-hmm. And so when I wanted that outlet and I felt a need to express myself, I really gravitated toward writing fiction and romantic comedies, where, as I mentioned before, I'd grown up on them, and really felt like I was writing it for myself at first, where I didn't have a lot of representation or people who looked like me or my family in the media growing up, whether it was in books or movies. And so that was a really important part of it for me when I was starting to write the first versions of Lunar Love, where I wanted to see that. I was hungry for that representation. And then that's when I started to kind of realize that maybe it could become something more. And that's when I started to query and for agents and did it the old fashioned way. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And I love it as an outlet. And as you mentioned, being able to talk about real life stuff, you know, whether it's heavy or it's happy, where there's love, there's loss, and life, there's death, and light, there's darkness. And I think that is a really interesting topic to talk about in romantic comedies, because it's such a safe space. Mm-hmm. Where at the end, you know that everyone will be okay in that moment, and grow from there. And there will be the life that they live beyond that. But I think it's such an amazing safe space to explore these topics in that can be harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I think it just, one is representation matters, like to see mm-hmm. yourself falling in love, because for so long it's been white, cis, heterosexual, middle class, upper middle class, you know, who can fall yeah. in love, and everyone else, minority, is like, all together, we're not allowed. Like, I'm Puerto Rican mm-hmm. and that was not allowed to, you know, there's a stereotype. And so I think reading romance is actually giving you permission to look at yourself and to look at, is this a possibility, and to look at opportunities to see, like, oh, this is healthy, or, oh, this is how I communicate, like, you know, to my partner.
Completely.
You know, real, or you can have anxiety and be lovable, or depression and be lovable, or fat and be lovable. Yeah. And so it's giving you permission to have that life. And so I think that happily or after gives you that, you know, everything's going to be okay.
Yes. Yes. Beautifully said.
And I think let's talk about Lunar Love, because Lunar Love actually brings in conversations about, like, you know, grief and loss and love and having plans, and then realizing, like, those plans are out the door. Yeah. So talk to us about elevator pitch of Lunar Love.
Sure. So Lunar Love is a romantic comedy about two Chinese zodiac matchmakers who have very different approaches to how they help people find love. One does it more traditionally, and this is Olivia Huang Christensen. She is taking over Lunar Love, which is her Popo's Chinese zodiac matchmaking business. And in Chinese, Popo means maternal grandmother. Then we have LA's most eligible bachelor, Bennett O'Brien, who is doing things a little bit more modern. And he is starting a dating app about the Chinese zodiac. The two go head to head in a competition to make a bet about whose methods work best. And they will pair each other up on dates. And the first person to fall in love loses.
Romance ensues. A good enemies to lovers. There's a good bakery scene where they're like fighting for a bacon. Yes. You know? So you're going to feel like if you're hungry, you're going to be like, okay, I need to go get these food right now.
Absolutely. It's true.
Like, it's going to give you, but I think it's important. Olivia's journey was important to see, because you broke her down. Like everything that she thought that she knew was, like, completely wrong, you know. And it's really telling as someone who's like, who had an idea, like, this is how love should work, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm a career woman, and like, love is not acceptable, and blah blah blah, the story that we tell ourselves, and realizing, like, having the hero comes in and be like, no, like, it's wrong.
Yeah, it's she does a lot of stretching in this of her own beliefs, and you know, sometimes we just need that patient person with us to help us. And I know that for me, that's been my husband. He's been very patient with me I think I've been patient with him too. But like, having that is sometimes really important. And Bennett is definitely that for Olivia, and all of her horse traits, really. She definitely embodies many of them.
Yeah. So what was the process of, like, because we hear, we get to know the Chinese zodiac, and like, all inside out, we know even everyone's Chinese zodiac name and like the horoscope. What was the process of researching and then discovering this part of the Chinese culture that is so important for the culture that, as you know, many Americans may be completely ignorant about it?
Sure. The research process was so interesting because I had grown up learning about the Chinese zodiac, but on a more surface level. So I knew what my traits were, and I'm year of the horse. I knew what my sisters, my parents were, and we celebrate Lunar New Year and learn a little bit more that way. But I got to do a deep dive into the other animal signs and learning about things like ascendants and the elements. And all of that was so interesting. There's a lot of pieces of cultural elements in this book I learned by writing the book. Mm-hmm. And that is really meaningful for me as a mixed race Chinese American to learn more about my culture in that way. Mm-hmm. So another big reason why writing is so important to me is to have that not only outlet, but a way to learn more about my culture. And so doing a lot of that research was eye-opening. It sparked conversation with family. And it was just really important to me as a person trying to learn more about my culture. I do a lot of that through food and cooking, mm-hmm. but learning more about the traditions and kind of the parties and celebrations was so special.
Yeah, it sounded so special. And like, there are things I can see, like, you know, if you follow horoscopes and stuff like that, you see some of the ideas, but I think it's so intricate, like, you know, what your year defined, and like Olivia's take on matchmaking, like how matchmaking should work, you know, like mm-hmm. what year is, like, you got to look at this red flags or green flags or people. And it sounded fascinating. It, like, it just immerses you in that world, and it gets you an idea, like, oh, like, there's a whole other way of thinking, you know.
Totally. And the Chinese zodiac is so interesting. It's a belief system, and it's based on the lunar calendar. Mm-hmm. And so it really goes back thousands of years. And it's really rooted in the way that a lot of matchmaking was done. Mm-hmm. And so I found that particularly interesting for Olivia, who is more traditional but also struggling with, and this is again where it's very meaningful, is trying to honor those traditions while modernizing, but also because a lot of her struggles is not thinking that she's enough, mm-hmm. and not really knowing a lot about family. And there's a scene where she's talking to her popo about traditions evolving and learning about cookie day, for instance, mm-hmm. for her sister's wedding. And we just don't know these things inherently. It's not just something we're born knowing. And so even when we spend a lot of time with family and friends and learning about our culture, you can still go a lot of years of your life really not knowing a whole lot about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's Olivia's struggle, and wanting to really make sure Lunar Love is a success, partially because she loves her popo and wants to keep the legacy going, but also because if she doesn't, it'll almost prove in a way that she's not enough, so she thinks. And so she really will go great lengths to keep it alive.
Yes. Oh, gotta read this book. It's so good. What are you working next? Are you working on anything new?
I am. I'm working on my second book. I am in revisions for it, and that'll be out in 2024. Mm-hmm. And so it grapples a lot with like fate and soulmates. And so all really fun topics. And I love these characters so much, and their whole storyline. So I'm really excited to share more. I'm going to make it through these edits.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited for this. And you're not my author, so I'm excited.
Oh my gosh, thank you. That's so nice.
So it is all good. So, all right, so let's chat some book recommendations. What kind of books do you tend to read?
I do a lot of romance, romantic comedy reading. I also really love nonfiction. Mm-hmm. And then kind of just more fiction. I've been lately trying to get into more thrillers, and I have a whole list growing for that. But that's not one that I think I sprinkle that in occasionally.
Yeah, it's so good. Sometimes you just need a murder book or a serial killer just to cleanse the palate. Like, exactly. If the husband did it, maybe the right way to go.
When you're reading a lot of romance, you're right. Like, thriller becomes a palate cleanser.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need a con artist or a husband did it. Like, the husband was licking his eye, you know?
Yeah. Just had to happen.
So it's all good. So do you have any books to recommend our listeners to pick up?
Yes. I have a few. So I recently read The Charmed List by Julie Abbe. It's a YA magical romance. And I really adored it. It was just a really fun escape. And the magic world that Julie just built was so creative. And I thought it was really immersive. And so I don't read a lot of like fantasy or magical realism, but this one was just so charming and just totally engulfed me into the story. And this main character, Ellie, creates an anti-wallflower list so that she can complete this over the summer. And when something goes wrong on it, getting revenge on her ex-best friend, Jack, she has to take a road trip with him to a magical convention to right wrongs. So I love a list in a book. And I thought the romance was really sweet. And the magic element was really fun.
Love a list in a book. So you had me at that.
Another one was X's and O's. Mm-hmm. Amelia, and that one was just really funny. I thought it was such a fun premise, and that one is perfect for crushes and Valentine's Day, which is around the time that I read it. And there's a really fun twist on the second chance romance trope. The main character, Tara, goes through her ex-boyfriend list to see if she can spark a second chance romance with any of them. Mm-hmm. And her grumpy sweetheart roommate, Trevor, kind of helps her along this journey. So just so much fun from start to finish.
Oh my God, that sounds so much fun, for sure.
Yeah. Another one is I'll Stop the World by Lauren Foman. And I just was so on edge reading this. It is multiple point of view story with a diverse cast. It's enthralling, smart, humorous, and it's time travel. So I thought that was really interesting. There's romance, tragedy, mystery in it. And she weaves together all of these storylines in a way that keeps you so emotionally and mentally engaged. That one comes out April 1. You have these multiple timelines of kind of, you're not quite sure what's happening when, and that's the point. And it is truly a mind twist.
Oh my gosh, I'm adding that for the TBR.
That's so good.
Yeah, we had a mind twist. So.
Love a mind twist. Another one is The Measure by Nikki Erlich. And on one day, everyone receives a box with a string in it. And that string tells you how long you have to live, like how long your life is. And some people open the box, some people don't. Some people find out how long they have, others choose not to. And it becomes a very divisive topic in the world, which mm-hmm. feels very relevant to our world, just with a slightly different twist on it. And it affects everyone slightly differently. And this is explored through varying perspectives. They're told through different perspectives. And so I felt so emotionally wrecked, and it made me just think about life in a totally different way. And I read this in the beginning of the year, which I'm like, it's a new year. And then I just kind of got destroyed. So it is very thought-provoking and thrilling, very well written. And I just read it with somebody, because then you can talk about it. All right, I'm just still waiting for my husband to read it.
I'm adding this one for sure. I need you to have me emotionally wrecked as someone who just went to therapy and was like, you got permission to cry. I need books that make me cry.
Yes, I cried at this one. And I like to say, I say this too. I don't often cry, like shed tears. I'll get very sad, but it's hard to actually shed tears. And so this one definitely made me shed tears.
Yep.
And then another one is Jonna Goes Wild by Farah Heron. And that one comes out in May. And it's an emotional second chance romance in such a stunning setting. And I really loved Kamala Knows Best. And so I love this character, Jonna, who we see as a side character in the other book. Now we get her our own book, which I thought was very excited about. And she wants to be seen as this vibrant person for this job that she's trying to get. And so she creates a letting loose list, which kind of ties back full circle to the anti-wallflower list. Clearly, I love a list. And so in this, she's more introverted as a character. And I felt like I've related to her in many different ways. And so her kind of coming out of her shell and learning how to do that, and to be more kind of social with people, I thought was very relatable for this character and myself. And Farah always does an amazing job with her books. They're totally immersive.
Oh my gosh, I'm adding this one. I actually do have an arc for this one. Like, I'm a huge fan of Farah's writing.
Yeah.
Just like fun. I don't know. They're just fun rom-com.
They are really fun.
So.
Agree.
We're adding it. So Lauren, tell us where you can find you online.
So on my website, you can find me at laurenkungjessen.com. I'm on Instagram mostly at Lauren K. Jessen. And then on Twitter as well, sometimes at Lauren K. Jessen. And then I also have a newsletter called Past, Present, Future, where I share things that evolve over time and provide book updates and what I'm reading, watching, cooking. And that is on Substack at Lauren K. Jessen. It's called Past, Present, Future.
Awesome. Thank you, Lauren, for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much, Laura. This was so fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other romance recommendations, please visit whatreadnextblog.com. Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With Libro.fm, you can pick up more than 250,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company, you know the name, but you'll be part of a different story, one that supports your local community. If you're new to audiobooks, there's a perfect way to squeeze into more reading to your busy life. Listen with the free Libro.fm app while you do your chores, walk your dog, relax at home. The Watch Read Next podcast has a special offer for our listeners. Get two audiobooks on Libro.fm for the price of one with your first month of membership. Use code WATCHREADNEXT. This offer is only valid for new members in Canada and the US. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? Watch Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.